Shalom, welcome to SJTF. I'm Chaim Ben Pesach from the Jewish Task Force. This is the program in which we attempt to answer questions from our great JTFers. I don't know how great a program I'm going to do this week because I've been up all night. It's early in the morning and I've been up all night. I didn't get any sleep at all because two strategic, vital, beautiful hilltop communities were destroyed by the Israeli government and the Israeli police in the past few hours. Two hilltop communities that JTF was very actively supporting. And it's an emergency situation, and we're doing everything we can. We want to rebuild as fast as possible. And we're going to tell you exactly what happened and what the challenge is, because this is literally a threat to Israel's very survival, this insane policy of not allowing Jews to settle in their own land and of allowing the Arab Muslim Nazis to take over everything in Judea and Samaria. It's just insanity, and it's evil. We're going to discuss exactly what happened, but first, this program is dedicated to a refuah shlema, complete recovery, for Sharon Mitman, Shlomo Ben Sara, and Dorit Bat Sara, and to Ilui Neshamot, Elevating of the Souls, for Malka Bat Meir, Allegra Bat Shlomo, Daniel Nankin, Victor Chazdai, Pesach Zeb Ben Dov, Lunita Adler, Shifra Hoffman, Ruven Hoffman, Bari Hoffman, Harav Mir Kahana, Harav Binyamin Kahana, Tzipora, Fegi Bat Liba, Yosef Ben Meir, Robert Mitman, Dennis Shore, Helen Friedman, and Charles Zolot. Within the past few hours, large numbers of Israeli police went to destroy two beautiful hilltop communities that are essential to the survival of Israel. One of them is called Geulat Zion, and the other one is called Ramat Migron. There were only two families living in each of these communities, in each of these hilltops, and then there were some young Jews who were studying Torah there, who lived there as well, studying Torah, and there are two actual families with children. The police came very early in the morning, like 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, with tractors and machinery to destroy these communities and expel the heroic pioneers who live in these communities. First of all, let's understand something. These two hilltops are at strategic points which block the Arab Muslim Nazis that want to destroy Israel from creating contiguous communities that would create a Palestinian state in everything but name. There is no Palestine, there are no Palestinians. But if a so-called Palestinian terrorist state is created in Israel's biblical heartland, in Judea, Samaria, and Jerusalem, it is national suicide for Israel. Israel will go back to boundaries that are only 6 to 9 miles wide, God forbid. And these heroic families, together with young Jews who are studying Torah, who are living there as well, they are the only hope we have for blocking this lunacy. Because they're going outside of what's called the settlement blocks that are clustered within only 3% of Judea and Samaria. The government has already proposed deals to give away 97, 96, 97% of Judea and Samaria. And keep 3 or 4% and say, oh, you see, we compromised. We get 3%, they get 97%. That's a compromise. And in the end, that means Israel goes back to boundary lines that Abba Ibn, the extreme left-wing foreign minister of Israel, called Auschwitz lines. Now, let's understand something here. If we don't win this battle with the hilltop youth, we are going to lose the battle, God forbid, for the land of Israel. We're going to face the possibility of an unbelievable catastrophe, bloodshed, and a bloodbath like we haven't seen since the Nazi Holocaust. We have got to win this battle, and we can win the battle if we just have enough support. Because there are young Jews, heroic young Jews, that are willing to put their lives on the line with their families in order to protect the land of Israel. They just need our backing and our support. That's all they need to win this battle. If they had enough support, if I just had $1 million, you know what $1 million is for one of these Jewish establishment organizations? Or for one of these left-wing causes that these self-hating sick Jews give so much money to? If I just had $1 million, We could save the land of Israel. We could save these communities. We could expand these communities, the Jewish communities, and prevent the Arabs from taking over. And we'd have a public relations campaign that would explain to the people of Israel the dangers involved, because most of the people of Israel don't even know, they're not even aware of what danger lurks. Anyway, in the violent expulsion that took place, look at some of the scenes, look at some, just a few of the pictures of the violent expulsion, the violence that was used by these fascistic Gestapo-like police coming and destroying the homes of these people. Look at this, look at the destruction of what was a beautiful, and they're just simple one-room homes. Because these families are willing to live in simplicity because they don't have money, and they're willing to live the simplest lives and give up all the pleasures. In one of these settlements, they don't even have running water and electricity. They're willing to give it all up because they love the land of Israel and the Jewish people. How can we not back them? How can we not support them? How can we stand in silence? Look at the destruction here of this, what was once a beautiful community on a hilltop in the land of Israel. Look at the violence that's being used. Here's a young Jew. I don't know if his nose was broken, but I don't know how clearly you can see in the picture, but you know, he got punched in the nose by the police, grabbed him, knocked him down, punched him in the nose, and his lip is bleeding here. His lip was cut open. And look what they do. Look what they do to this young Jewish lady here. Look how they treat them. You think they would do this to an Arab Muslim Nazi terrorist woman with the burqa? These Arab terrorist women running around with their crazy burqa? Would they dare do this to an Arab Muslim woman? Look how they treat Jewish women in Israel. And look at this synagogue. A synagogue was destroyed by these police, brutally destroying a synagogue. Would they go? I want to see them go and destroy an Arab mosque. I'd like to see them do that. This is simply an insane, these are Jewish anti-Semites. The people who run the government of Israel and the prior government under the Likud and under Netanyahu were also Jewish anti-Semites. They do things to Jews that they would never do to the enemies of the Jewish people, that they'd never do to anyone else, but they'll do it to their fellow Jews. And they'll do it dafka, especially go out of their way to do it to good Jews, to God-fearing Torah Jews, idealistic Jews. What a disgrace. If we just somehow could figure out a way to raise $1 million or $2 million for these people, and on a regular basis could support them. None of the money, I'm not going to take any salary, you know that. I give money out of my own pocket for this cause. And I mean, all of the money will go to the cause. 100% of the money will go to the cause. This is the one cause where you never have to worry that they're going to betray their principles or they're going to compromise. These are the people who are the ultimate idealists. You'll never be sorry for having supported these people. You know, you support other, at least I've had the experience where you support other causes and people promise you things and then they lie and break their word and, you know, and then you regret that you supported them. You believe them and then they break their word and you know, you regret that you supported them. This is one group of people where you don't have to worry about that. They have a history of being so loyal and determined and decent and self-sacrificing. I can't believe that every Jew and righteous Gentile isn't out there thinking of what can I do to help these people. This is the most noble cause in the world and the most essential cause. Because if we build enough of these hilltop communities and we strengthen these hilltop communities and we put enough Jewish families there, the Arabs cannot create a PLO terrorist state, an independent terrorist state in Israel's biblical heartland if we do this. They are the obstacle to the creation of a PLO terrorist state. That's what the European Union says. That's what the Arab League says. That's what the PLO says. That's what all of them say. What's the American State Department? That's what Trump's administration and Biden's administration, everybody else always said, you've got to get rid of these outposts. They're an obstacle. They're going to prevent us from creating the two-state solution. And they're right. They are an obstacle to this insane plan to create a terrorist state that would mean the end of Israel as a Jewish state. How could we live in such an insane generation where nobody realizes that these are the only people that have an ounce of sanity or decency or morality? These are the only people that are making any sense. These are the only people saying this is our land and we're not going to let you give it away. And we're not just talk. We're not a bluff. We're not talk. We're really doing it. And by the way, I'm sorry to say, JTF is the only organization that's not bluffing. Because we give our whole budget to help these people. We also have a part of the budget that goes also to our videos, to advertising our videos in Hebrew. But that's a whole bunch of Hebrew videos to educate the people of Israel and wake them up, which is also an essential part of our campaign. But most of our budget, the vast majority of our budget, doesn't even go to the Hebrew videos. The vast majority goes to these communities, to helping these heroic Jews. If anybody out there has ideas on how to help these heroic Jews, please give us those ideas. And if you want to contribute, please, I'm going to tell you in a moment how to do that. But we need desperately to put together a campaign that will help. And we're working on, we were looking at the fundraising sites, because you can go to sites and do fundraising on certain sites. But even if we do that, we need people who are going to go to those sites and donate money. You got to bring your own people to the site. If let's say GoFundMe or one of these other sites where you can raise money for any cause, you got to bring your own people there. They don't advertise for you. So we need people to help us. We need your help. We need your help financially, and we need your ideas, and we need you to publicize us, and we need you to help us in every way possible. This is the premier cause to save the Jewish people in Israel. You know, I hope I'm going to get to the questions in a moment, but you know, I'm still running on energy, even though, you know, I'm a 65-year-old guy. I'm an old man, and I was just up all night long for hours back and forth trying to help and trying to figure out how to raise money to rebuild these two communities, because they're going to rebuild, God willing. They don't give up. They never, these people don't surrender and don't give up. And neither will JTF. And, you know, so I'm a little tired, but I'm running on energy. I'm running high on energy because of all the events that happened. And so, you know, I think I'll survive going through the day, even though I'm an old man now. I can't do what I used to do when I was young, when I was in JDL. I had sleepless nights doing all types of things for the Jewish people, especially for Soviet Jewry. But, you know, now I'm an old man. But it's certainly worth it. There's no better purpose in life than helping this cause. And I have never been prouder in my life than I am to be fighting for these people, for this cause. I've never been prouder in my life. And I want all of you JTFers to be just as proud as me. Now, if people want to contribute to this cause, they can go to PayPal, and you just go to hayamin.org, which is our Hebrew main page, hayamin.org. You go to the donate button in English on top. You click on the donate button, and in a few minutes you can donate. And you should also, by the way, urge other people that you know to do the same thing. Or you can send it through the regular mail, checks and money orders, to JTF PO Box 650327, Fresh Meadows, New York, 11365. JTF PO Box 650327, Fresh Meadows, New York, 11365. All right, let's get now to our questions from our great JTFers. And we start out with a really great JTFer, our representative in Israel, Ron from Israel. What a great Jew he is. And he writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, can you discuss the murder of Hilltop Youth hero Ahuvia Sandak by the Israeli leftist police and the morbid police brutality against the protesters who demand justice for him? Thanks and God bless you, Ron. Yes, Ahuvia Sandak was a 16-year-old Hilltop Youth activist. He lived on a hill in a hilltop community. He was 16 years old. And the police harass these people. The only crime, quote-unquote, that they commit is they want to live in Israel. They want to live in the land of Israel. And they don't want the Arabs to take over everything and endanger Israel's survival. That's their crime. And the police accuse them of all types of things and claim that sometimes that they retaliate against for Arabs, because Arabs commit terrorism against Jews. And so they claim that these youth sometimes go out and retaliate by spraying graffiti on Arab property or various other things to Arab property. Meanwhile, the Arabs, and by the way, in many cases, the Arabs themselves do it. It's not the hilltop youth who do it. But you should know that even if some Jewish kid does spray graffiti somewhere, we're talking about Arabs who murder in cold blood and have murdered in cold blood thousands of innocent Jewish men, women, and children since the creation of the State of Israel. Anyway, it happens to be that Ahuvia Sandak, the 16-year-old kid, had nothing, was never involved in any illegal activity. And yet the police were deliberately chasing him and other hilltop youth heroes. They chased them, and then they deliberately rammed their car into this car so that it would crash and turn over. They deliberately rammed the car. They rammed the police car into this car to make it crash and turn over, which it did. And Ahuvia Sandak was severely injured and dying in the car, and he needed medical help urgently, and the police would not allow medical help. They would not allow any medical help to reach Ahuvia Sandak, so he died. He was murdered by the police. This is murder. This was pure and simple murder. And by the way, the four other hilltop youth were injured, and one of them was critically injured, was in critical condition and needed to get to the hospital, and also could have died. Thank God he didn't die. These are 16-year-old kids. Murdering a 16-year-old kid. What did he do? He had no criminal record. What did he do? What did he do wrong? What, that he lived in the land of Israel and wanted to settle the land of Israel, wanted to protect the land of Israel, and they murdered him in cold blood, the Israeli police? And, of course, complete police cover-up, and nobody does anything about it. So now there are protests. The hilltop youth, hundreds and even thousands of hilltop youth and their supporters are protesting in Jerusalem. And the brutality, the police brutality that's being directed against these protesters. Women and children holding up signs, peacefully holding up signs on a street corner, in the street, legally protesting, holding up a sign, asking for justice, are brutally attacked. Are brutally beaten and attacked and knocked to the ground and sprayed with the worst type of spray that it's so bad they can't get it off, they can't get the smell off for weeks. That's how bad it is. And there's a special type of chemical agent that they spray in the faces of girls, teenage girls, women, babies and young children, they spray them with this chemical. Can you imagine if in the United States, they talk about police brutality in the United States, can you imagine if the police in the United States tried to do this? Just outrageous. Just outrageous. The worst thing quote unquote, is sometimes they'll engage in peaceful civil disobedience. Some of the protesters, a minority of the protesters, engage in peaceful civil disobedience, which is what Martin Luther King and Mahatma Gandhi did, and everybody in history praises them and makes them heroes for having done this. Martin Luther King and Mahatma Gandhi and the people in the protests that took place in the South against segregation in the South in the 60s, they're now lionized as heroes. But when these hilltop youth attempt to do that in order to bring attention to this injustice that's taking place and the brutal shedding of blood and murder that's taking place, when they attempt to do this, they're brutally beaten, they're condemned by everybody, they're arrested and charged with all types of crazy things that are ridiculous. This miscarriage of justice has to stop. It has to stop. Hashem is not happy when he sees miscarriages of justice. The first thing the prophets in the Bible warn us against is committing injustices and perverting the criminal justice system. And charging innocent people with all types of things and shedding innocent blood. Oh, this is the worst thing you can do. Hashem is not happy with this. And we have an obligation to speak out and let everybody know that we're not going to be silent when this happens. If you support JTF, you're supporting the Hilltop Youth and you're supporting justice for Ahuvia Sandak, a 16-year-old kid who was a Jewish hero and idealist, the most noble, magnificent example of Jewish idealism, and a very brave Jewish kid who was just brutally murdered. And we're not going to be silent about it. And if you support JTF, you're supporting those that want to make sure that this case doesn't die and that there's justice against the murderers who committed this crime. Thank you, Ron. And now we go to the great Hirvatsky Noachide, who always has very interesting questions. And Hirvatsky Noachide writes, why can a manslayer only obtain full atonement through being killed by a blood redeemer? And then in parenthesis, Hirvatsky writes, the laws of the government may permit or forbid any application of the blood redeemer concept. Close parenthesis. Well, I don't know if you're referring, when you say manslayer, there are probably two separate rules. There are probably separate rules to a certain degree for Jews who are accused of this and Gentiles, and I'll explain why. The Gentiles are given more flexibility in terms of setting their own laws. First of all, there are at least two types of murder. And the word murder is the word that's actually used in the Torah. Retzach and rotzchim. Rotzchim are murderers and retzach is murder. One is murder one is just murder with premeditation. Bezadon. Someone who murders bezadon, in other words, premeditated, calculated murder, the penalty is a death penalty. And that's true for Jews, and that should also be true in Gentile courts for the Gentiles. That is what Hashem expects. Hashem expects us to execute people who deliberately, in cold blood, go out and murder some innocent person. That person should pay with their life. But there is another type of murder that's described. We don't really use the word murder nowadays in modern English or in modern Hebrew, but in the Hebrew of the Torah, the word murder was also used, and it's called bishkaga. Shkaga means that it was unintentional, that it wasn't deliberate. The person didn't deliberately, intentionally decide to murder somebody, but it was either through recklessness or carelessness. For instance, if somebody is doing construction on a construction site and is careless and allows a block to fall on somebody's head and it kills them, they didn't intend for that to happen. They didn't want that to happen, but they were reckless and they were careless, and so they're guilty of something which is terrible. But they didn't deliberately commit murder, so there is a difference. That's where the difference kicks in between Jews and Gentiles. The Jews, when they're in the land of Israel, have what's called an Ir Miklat. Ir Miklat means a refuge city. And there are refuge cities that are created for the Jews to escape to, because the blood relatives of the person who was killed, even if he was killed unintentionally, the blood relatives can go and take revenge on this person. So this person is required to go and live in a refuge city. And we're talking about modern Israel. You don't have this because they're not living according to Torah law, but this would be under Torah law. They'd have to live in a refuge city, the person who recklessly killed somebody. And they'd have to stay there until the high priest, until HaKohen HaGadol, the high priest, dies. They would have to remain in that refuge city. That would be the price they'd have to pay for having recklessly killed somebody or carelessly killed somebody, which is a serious sin. It's not as serious as deliberately killing, but it's a serious sin. And that's called, again, shkaga, killing through shkaga, through unintentional circumstances. Now here, There's a difference to the Gentiles. Remember, with the Jews and the Gentiles, there's no difference for intentional murder. Intentional murder, a Jew or a Gentile who commits intentional murder should pay with their life. There's no difference. But in this case, when it's unintentional, for the Jews, it's the refuge city, Ir HaMiklat. For the Gentiles, the Torah pretty much allows Gentile nations to set their laws. The Gentile nations are given a lot of flexibility on how to handle unintentional murder cases. So Bnei Noach, the Bnei Noach, who are the righteous Gentiles, they're given a lot of flexibility on what to do in a case like this, on how to. There should be some punishment. There should be justice against, because you can't just go around and carelessly allow people to be killed. I mean, that's a terrible thing to do. But what exactly should be the penalty? Gentile nations are given a lot of flexibility in setting their own rules on that, according to the Torah. As long as the justice is fair and it's equal and it's not, you don't have a situation where judges are bribed and the rich get away with it and the poor are punished. You can't have Jewish or Gentile courts. You have to have fair courts and just courts, but the Gentiles can set up their own laws and their own courts and set punishments according to what they think is the appropriate punishment in a case like this. Again, thank you, Hirvatsky. I told you, Hirvatsky only asks the highest quality questions. And now we go to Ram Sheva Sheva Ephes. And he's going to ask me in Hebrew, and I'm going to read it in Hebrew, and then I'm going to translate it in English. It'll only take a couple of minutes, don't worry. And I'll translate it I'll answer him in Hebrew and translate it. Just take a couple of minutes, so don't worry. I know there are people, most of our viewers don't speak Hebrew, so we wouldn't dwell on this a long time for that reason. Ram writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim Hayakar Mashlomcha. Hello Chaim, hello dear Chaim, how are you? Anachnu osin be'esrim ushnayim lachodesh bikur b'Knesset Yisrael, ani Udi Vertman ve'od kama anashim ve'gam ze efshari lesaper לחבר הכנסת שמחה רוטמן את הסיפור שלך. And here Ram writes, I'm going with several other people, and he mentions names of some of his friends, that he's going on the 22nd of the month to visit the Knesset, and they're going to visit apparently with the Knesset member Simcha Rotman, and is it okay for them to tell my story to Knesset member Simcha Rotman? Ram, kamovan, Tuchal lomar lo ma kara li, ma hasipur, כן, אין שום בעיה עם זה. יש לי ספק רב שהוא יכול לעזור, כי לצערי הרב, שר הפנים, או כמה שרי פנים, כבר החליטו לא לתת לי להיכנס בגלל ההתנגדות של השבק, וזה מגוחך. שהם לא נותנים לי להיכנס, כי אני שומר חוק, ואני מעולם לא הפרתי שום חוק במדינת ישראל. אבל בכל אופן, תוכל לומר להם מה קרה לי. כן, תוכל. And Ram writes now, and I just told him that yes, you can tell them my story, because I never violated any laws. And now Ram writes, and I quote, ואגב, מה דעתך על האלה מתנגדים לחיסונים כמו הרב אמנון יצחק ומשה פייגלין? And then he asks, what do I think of those who oppose the vaccinations like הרב אמנון יצחק and משה פייגלין? I'll answer him first in Hebrew and then in English. אני חושב שזה טירוף דעת להתנגד לחיסונים. החיסונים מצילים חיים. מעל 90% מהחולים ומהמתים עכשיו הם האנשים שלא קיבלו את החיסונים. And I just told him that over 90% of the people who are unvaccinated, over 90% of the deaths and illnesses now are from people who are unvaccinated, and this is true in every country. It is the unvaccinated that are continuing to give us this nightmare. It's because of their stupidity that we still have this nightmare. If everybody got vaccinated, this would be over. And Moshe Feiglin, Harav Amnon Yitzchak, they're crazy. I'm sorry, they're crazy. Hem Meshugaim. אתה רוצה לשאול על, על אנשים שמתנגדים, הם משוגעים, פשוט משוגעים, משוגעים, כי הנתונים כל כך ברורים. They're insane because the statistics I just told Ram in Hebrew are so clear. רק לידיעתך, אני עשיתי את החיסון, אבא שלי ואחותי עשינו, לא קרה כלום. And then he says, I just want you to know that I got vaccinated and my father and my sister and nothing happened to us. Okay. Ani modeh lecha Ram, I thank you Ram. And now we go to the great Binyamin Yisrael, who writes, and I quote, one, can you discuss the following in more details? Bill de Blasio, Eric Adams, unquote. Bill de Blasio, he is the current mayor of New York. He's not going to be mayor in a few weeks. He, for the past 8 years, has been an unbelievable catastrophe. Crime has gone up. Taxes have gone up. The budget is bloated. The deficit has gone up. Everything is everything. Homelessness is worse. Everything is worse. Socialism doesn't work, and he's a socialist. And now Binyamin asks about Eric Adams. Eric Adams is going to be his successor. This is a black Farrakhan supporter, a black Jew-hating Farrakhan supporter. And that's bad news. That is bad news. And they're turning him into some sort of great idol because he was a police, because he was on the police force. He was on the police force basically saying that the police force should be turned into a black police force, and basically saying that the police and everyone else are racist. He accused everyone of being racist when he was on the police force. So, I mean, I think he's very bad news. And Binyamin now writes too, discuss these mayors of New York, and then he lists various people who were mayors in the past. Fiorella H. LaGuardia, William O'Dwyer, Vincent Impellitteri, and Robert F. Wagner Jr. Okay. I'm not 100% familiar with the full records of all of these mayors because all of them except for the last one, Robert Wagner, were mayor before I was born, and I'm 65 years old, so that's a long time ago. Robert Wagner left office when I was a child, when I was, I think, 8 years old. LaGuardia was a self-hating Jew. His mother was Jewish, his father was Italian, and he became, I think, Episcopalian, or I forgot what one of these Protestant, left-wing Protestant sects. But he was a self-hating Jew. He left the Jewish faith, even though his mother was Jewish, and tried to hide the fact that he was Jewish. And many people never knew that he was Jewish. They thought he was Italian. Many people thought Abe Beam was the first Jewish mayor of New York. They used to say that in the 1970s, but he wasn't. LaGuardia was the first Jewish mayor of New York because his mother was Jewish. So he was a self-hating Jew and a leftist. And Binyamin now writes, William O'Dwyer. William O'Dwyer was a crook. And he was appointed by President Truman to be ambassador to Mexico to escape the investigations that were being done against him. He was a crook and ran a corrupt government. And again, New York City was going downhill from people like LaGuardia, then O'Dwyer. Impellitteri, I don't know much about him, but I know that I think he was mayor for I don't know. He wasn't mayor for a long time. It was, I think, less than one term. And he certainly didn't improve anything when he was mayor. The same corrupt system of government that led to the downfall of New York City. Robert F. Wagner Jr. Robert F. Wagner Jr. was a mayor for 12 years, a disaster, also a disaster. All the mayors of New York were very bad, except I'd say for Rudy Giuliani. Rudy Giuliani, for 8 years, did improve things in the city when it came to crime and safety, but all the other mayors were very bad. Robert F. Wagner was also very bad. Budget deficits, lawlessness, affirmative action, welfare, housing projects, homelessness, crime, all the things that we see now, this started to fester in a serious way during the Wagner administration, which was the 1950s and early 1960s. And then Binyamin writes, are the Irish and Italians in question too the type of Irish and Italian righteous Gentiles that JTF would talk about? No, none of them are righteous Gentiles. None of them. And they're not. And some of them are not Irish and Italian. LaGuardia, as I mentioned, is Jewish. And Wagner, by the way, his father was German. Like Wagner, like the musician Wagner, his father was German. His mother was Irish. All right, thank you very much, Binyamin. And now we go to our good friend Chicago Jew, who writes your thoughts on the Kyle Rittenhouse trial from Kenosha, Wisconsin. I don't know if I pronounced it right. You know, I'm Chicago Jew. I have to apologize to you. I'm not really keeping up with it. I mean, I've seen headlines, and I know that on Fox News, a lot of people are defending him, and I know that on the leftist stations, everybody's calling him a Nazi and a white supremacist. I don't know. I know that he was accused of making the Nazi symbol with his fingers and hands and doing Nazi symbols with the Proud Boys. That he was accused. If that's true, then he's a very bad person. Certainly the people that he's accused of killing, the two people he's accused of killing, were both leftist scum, and we certainly don't shed any tears. No loss to society over that. But still, if he's a Nazi, or if he's a leftist, or if he's an anti-Semite, then you know that we do not like anti-Semites on this program. So I don't know enough to make a definitive judgment on that. Thank you, Chicago Jew. And we go now to another good friend of ours, Joe Gutfeld, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, other than the Hilltop Youth, is there any other group or organization that the JTF supports in Israel? Unquote. No, the only other thing that we spend money on is our advertising of our Hebrew videos to reach the people of Israel with our message on the Hebrew videos that there's we have messages that there's no Palestinian people, that Israel cannot afford to give up any land, that the phony right is even worse than the left. The usual things that you hear on this show, we try to bring those facts to the people of Israel in our Hebrew videos. And we have, by the way, we've gotten over 2 million views on our Hebrew videos that we advertise in Israel. So that's the only thing we spend money on, but that is a much smaller portion of our budget than the really big part of our budget, which goes to the Hilltop Youth. Thank you, Joe. And we now go to another longtime JTFer that we love to hear from, Yimach Shmo Islam, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, discuss the ever-so-popular video game Grand Theft Auto. Do you believe it is evil and leads people to commit crimes in real life? Unquote. Yimach Shmo Islam, I have to apologize to you for this because I don't know anything about video games. I never played video games. So I don't know anything about it except to say that if it glorifies stealing and if it glorifies crime, then of course it's terrible. Of course, you should never do that. And especially, you know that video games are going to be are something that young people, especially young boys, are going to play. And some young boys get addicted to these games. So of course, if it gives a negative, if it has a negative immoral theme to it. If the theme is, oh, how cool it is to steal autos and to steal things and to commit crimes, if that's the theme, then it would be terrible. But I honestly don't know enough because I don't know anything about video games. But yes, if that's what it does, then it's very bad. It's very bad because video games are not an innocent thing that people play just for fun. If you want to play a video game that isn't immoral, there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong per se with a video game. But if you're going to play video games with that, the goal is to glorify evil and make evil things cool, that's bad. That's very bad. Thank you, Yimach Shmo Islam. And now we go to our great JTFer, Nachus, who is a really great JTFer. Nachus is a long-time JTFer, a long-time friend of mine. And Nachus writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, one, your thoughts on Kabbalah and especially the modern-day practice of it, unquote. Well, the Kabbalah is something that if people are going to study it, it should only be studied by Torah scholars, by people who are really familiar with the Torah and who have a deeper understanding because it's very, very deep. The people who study it now in these Kabbalah classes, that's a joke. It's a joke and it's a farce. And they do classes saying you can study Kabbalah, but you don't have to follow the mitzvot of the Torah. That you don't have to worry about. You just look at the deep. You just look at Kabbalah, and the meanings they give to the Kabbalah are ridiculous. So you know, Kabbalah is something that only Torah scholars who have substantial Torah knowledge should even look at, should dwell on. even yeshiva students in Israel, yeshiva students who have some substantial knowledge in Torah, matters of Torah, even they don't study Kabbalah unless they've reached a certain high level. And that's what should be. And now Nachas writes, and I quote too, your opinion of Bernard Goetz, Joseph Farah, and Robert Spencer, thanks, unquote. Bernie Goetz, for our younger JTFers, in the 1980s, Bernie Goetz was approached by four black criminals who wanted to rob him on a subway train, and he shot them and paralyzed a couple of them. I don't remember exactly what, but I know that he shot them. The jury in the end acquitted him because the jury was very sympathetic to him. It was a time of very high crime, and so the jury was sympathetic, and they just convicted him on illegal possession of a gun, and he got 6 months in prison. Which I don't think he should have gotten. I think he should have gotten a medal. Somebody comes and endangers your life and threatens your life and yourself, and you defend yourself, and it's self-defense, and it was clearly self-defense. You shouldn't be found guilty of anything. You shouldn't do 6 seconds in prison. You should never be arrested or charged to begin with. And they also sued him in civil court in the Bronx, and they got billions of dollars. The jury said, I want to give billions of dollars in compensation. Mm-hmm. They gave billions to the defendants, to the black defendants who because they went in front of a Bronx jury, and you know what a Bronx jury is like. Mm-hmm. So they gave literally, I think, like $2 or $3 billion in judgments against them. Just unbelievable insanity. So I don't know what even happened with that, but I think that's hanging over him, that he has a several billion with a B in judgment against him. Because, you know, affirmative action people don't know the difference between millions and billions and trillions and zillions. It all sound the same to me. That's the white man's subject. That not be a subject that we don't have to know that subject. That's just a white racist subject. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Oh, I'm sorry. We got Joseph Farah. We got two more people that we have to cover here. Joseph Farah, he runs a website, and he is of Arab extraction, but he actually is pro-Israel. He's an evangelical Christian who is pro-Israel. I don't mind. I think he's okay as long as he doesn't proselytize. If he tries to proselytize, that's a problem. If he tries to convert Jews, that could be a problem. And some of the evangelical Christians that say that they're pro-Israel sometimes do engage in proselytizing in attempts to convert Jews. If they don't do that and they just believe in what they believe in, and they're pro-Israel, I wouldn't have any problem with it. Even though I would rather see Christians as B'nai Noach, because I think that Christianity is an absurd, idolatrous religion, and I just don't understand how anybody could believe that the Almighty God, the Creator of the heavens and the earth, could become a human being and be born in a virgin, and such pagan concepts. I don't know how anybody could believe in something like that. But what can you do? There are 1.5 billion people in the world who do believe in that. Nachas now asks about Robert Spencer. Robert Spencer is someone who has done exposés on Islam and Muslims, and I don't know enough detail to really say if we really like him or don't like him. But he seems to be a pretty gutsy guy. He's going against the Muslims who have threatened his life many times, and he has exposed certain aspects of Islamic behavior that are worth exposing. He may do things also that I don't like, but that I don't know about. But if he's exposing Islam, then if that's what he's doing, I would have no objection to that. Certainly not. Islam should be exposed. Thank you, Nachas. And now we go to the great Dr. Dan, who is also a great JTFer for quite a few years, and just a wonderful human being, someone that I know is a wonderful human being. Dr. Dan writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, hope all is well. One, NBC calls an all-Muslim city council in a Michigan city diverse. Says that this is diverse. Huh? Please teach the Americans what the definition of diverse is, unquote. Yeah, well, this is the politically correct. You know, you could, if something's all black, that's diverse. We have to have, they say we have to have diverse juries. What are diverse juries? Diverse juries are 12 black jurors. You know, I remember with Rabbi Kahana, when he had his state case and they let the Arab terrorist who murdered him, who assassinated him, off, even though he had 100 witnesses against him, and he was caught with the gun in his hand, with the murder weapon in his hand, the smoking gun in his hand, and all the witnesses and everything else, and still, you know, the jury decided to acquit him. This was a jury of 11 blacks. I think it was 11 blacks and one white. And they called it a diverse jury. The media referred, said, well, at least it was a diverse jury. So, I mean, this is the type of insanity we have and the type of word games that they play with us, type of propaganda that we're inundated with. Dr. Dan now writes, too, discuss the infrastructure deal which passed and the squad members voted against it. Thank you. God bless you and your family, unquote. And I thank you, Dr. Dan, and God bless you and your family. The infrastructure, the infrastructure deal is a terrible, it's insane. The government should not be in the business of doing these things. The government is deeply in debt. The United States government is deeply, deeply in debt. So this is insane. Donald Trump did infrastructure deals like this and wasted trillions of dollars and added trillions of dollars to the debt for no reason. And Joe Biden is continuing that. And the Democrats and the Republicans in Congress are doing it. It's insanity. There should be no infrastructure deals. If anything, the focus should be on how to start working down this gigantic debt that you have, and cutting spending and cutting the budget. Instead, the budget's exploding. It's madness. As far as the squad members voting against it, they voted against it because they want even more spending. They don't think it's enough. They want complete communism. So, the only thing I could say is it's sick and getting sicker. Thank you, Dr. Dan. And now we go to, we're getting all the great ones. That's the reason I love doing this show. Nekama, who always asks the greatest questions and also was a great person, a great human being. Nekama writes, and I quote, Der Chaim, one, if you call a Persian, Iranian, an Arab, they view it as the ultimate insult. So why is it that some Mizrahi Jews embrace the Arab-Jew identity? How disgusting and what a chilul Hashem, unquote. Absolutely. And, you know, my family on my mother's side came from the Arab world, from Egypt, Morocco, from Arab countries. And I can tell you that if you called someone in my family an Arab-Jew, they would be very insulted. And they should be very insulted. You know, the Jews in Arab countries were discriminated against and persecuted and put in ghettos. And yet they never wanted to convert to Islam. Very few of them left the Jewish faith and became Muslims. All they had to do was become Muslims and leave, and that would be it. That would be their ticket to success in Muslim society. They wouldn't be part of this very harsh, discriminatory, and dangerous situation of being part of the Jewish minority in an Arab country. And yet very few of them left. They remained faithful to the Jewish people. They were not attracted. There was nothing in Islam or in Arab society that attracted them. They saw the violence, the immorality, the viciousness, the cruelty of Islam and of Islamic life and Arab life and the way Arabs treat their women and treat their children. They saw the cruelty, the barbarism, the viciousness. And it did not appeal to them. Even though they could have been more successful and could have made more money and could have gotten out of the Jewish ghettos, and very few of them took that route. Most of them wanted to remain Jewish. And now we see people embracing this because they've been so brainwashed and taught how anyone who's an enemy of the Jewish people, we're taught, is wonderful. And so this is the tragedy we have. We have sick, self-hating Jews who glorify anyone as long as they're an anti-Semite. We have Jewish anti-Semites. The Jewish media in Israel are Jewish anti-Semites. The Jewish government of Israel, Jewish anti-Semites. The Jewish professors in Israel are Jewish anti-Semites. Why are they Jewish anti-Semites? Because the whole world hates the Jews, and there's been so much persecution all these years. So after all these years, they decided, you know what? If the whole world hates us so much, they must be right. Maybe we are terrible. Maybe what they say about us is right. So they've decided to join, you know, to join the anti-Semitic chorus and become Jewish anti-Semites. Anyway, I agree with you. It is horrible, and no self-respecting Sephardic or Mizrahi Jew, calling them an Arab Jew, that is the ultimate insult for the vast majority of Sephardic or Mizrahi Jews, and any Jew who wants to be called an Arab Jew is a self-hating Jew. Nekama now writes, and I quote, "Two, I recently saw a fascinating documentary on the 1971 Attica Correctional Facility uprising. Unsurprisingly, and as usual, there were two Jews involved in aiding and abetting the Shvarza criminals. First was Jerry Rosenberg, a.k.a. Jerry the Jew, an inmate at Attica, was convicted of killing two policemen in Brooklyn. Jerry the Jew was the jailhouse lawyer who aided and abetted the Shvarzas in the riot. Second was William Kunstler, Yimach Shmo v'Zichro, who was part of the Observer Committee and argued for clemency for the prisoners who killed a prison guard in the initial uprising. What do you remember about this event, how it ended, and what lessons are to be learned?" Well, I mean, I was only 14 years old when this took place, so I don't remember that much, except that, you know, of course there were deaths and everything else, and the black inmates, they were all black Muslims, you know, the black inmate, all Jew-hating scum. William Kunstler, of course, the second Jew that you mentioned here, is got to be one of the most evil Jews in history. I mean, he volunteered to represent the Arab murderers of Rabbi Kahana and the Arabs who bombed the World Trade Center. He volunteered to represent them. He thought it was wonderful what they did. Ron Kuby also volunteered. Ron Kuby was working with William Kunstler and also volunteered to represent these Muslim Nazi terrorists. Jerry Rosenberg, Jerry the Jew, who, as you mentioned, played a prominent role in offering legal advice and representing. He was a prisoner there at Attica, and he offered legal advice, and he actually became a lawyer inside the prison system. And he represented them during the riot. I met Jerry the Jew, and I met Jerry the Jew when I was at the Metropolitan Correctional Center in New York, federal prison in New York, For people who don't know, I spent 5 years in the prison system for my activities on behalf of Soviet Jewry when I was the head of the Jewish Defense League, the JDL. And when I was at the MCC, Jerry the Jew, Jerry Rosenberg, was one of the people that I met there. I met him twice there, actually. In other words, I met him at two different times that I was there. And I would see him on a daily basis while I was there. And I was there for quite a while. I was there for 9 months. I was at the MCC. And why was he in a federal prison when he's a state prisoner? Because he filed laws challenging the constitutionality of state prison conditions, and so sometimes when you would file federal cases and federal laws and get into federal court, they would transfer you from state prison to federal prison while your case is pending. So I actually met him there. What can I say? What a waste. What a way! I mean, he was actually quite intelligent and talented. And what did he do? He spent, you know, that he spent 46 years in prison until he died in prison. He murdered two police officers, and he died in the prison system. He spent 46 years in prison. What a waste! What a joke! And spent his time in prison helping every Shvarza under the sun. That's where Jewish brain power goes. Thank you, Nekama. And now we go to Confederate Kahanis. So good to see you again. We haven't seen you. You know, we don't see you that often lately. It's great to see you again, Confederate Kahanist. And Confederate Kahanis writes, and I quote, "Dear Chaim, can you discuss the rapper Travis Scott?" I don't know much about him because, you know, I hate rap. So I don't know much about him, except that I do know that he has two illegitimate children. You know, I mean, he's never been married, and he has two kids with this woman. He lives with a woman and has never been married. And, you know, he makes so much money. He makes millions of dollars. He can't marry a woman that he's having, that he had two children with, two babies with? I mean, what type of, you know, just disgusting. Disgusting. I'm sure his rap, I never heard any of his rap noise because I can't stand listening to it. I can't stand listening to rap. But, you know, I'm sure it's immoral garbage because his life is immoral garbage. But in every case, they have illegitimate children. Over 80% of black babies in the United States are illegitimate. Their parents are not married. What type of community is this? Horrible. Just a nightmare. And now they've spread this disease to the whites. Now a very high percentage of white babies are illegitimate. This is a nightmare. Confederate Kahanis now writes, and I quote, "Can you discuss what a second term of Trump would be like? Thanks and God bless," unquote. I think a second Trump term would be similar to the first Trump term. And we may find out what it's going to be like, because I think Biden is very unpopular, despite the fact that the leftist media supports him. I think he's unpopular among the American people. I think if there was an election held now between Trump and Biden, I think Trump would beat Biden this time. Biden did defeat Trump. That's baloney that the election was stolen. It's complete baloney. Biden got 7 million votes more than Trump. 7 million votes more. It's just nonsense. It's like all the other nonsense that Trump spews. But if the election were held now, I think Trump would win. That's how unpopular I think Biden is. So who knows? I don't know what's going to be in 2024 when they hold the next presidential election. But Trump did not do any of the things that he promised to do. He only built 5% of the big, great wall that he was going to build all along the U.S.-Mexico border. Build that wall. Build that wall. Build that wall. Remember every Trump rally? 95% of it was unbuilt. And only the 5% was built. And even parts of the 5% were not even a real wall in some cases. It was just a fence, which is the same thing you got under Obama. What a joke. How could people not be upset? It's so obvious. You know, Trump just held a gay gathering. I'm going to ask the Trump supporters, all the Trumpsters that are watching this, because a lot of people quit JTF because I started criticizing Trump for being a sellout. Me and Ann Coulter. Ann Coulter also turned against him for the same reason. I turned against him also because of Israel. But anyway, Ann Coulter turned against him because he didn't keep any of his promises on the wall. He didn't do any of this. But I want to ask the Trumpsters a question. At Mar-a-Lago, or Mar-a-Lago, whatever he calls it, they just held a huge celebration, gay pride celebration, that Trump was there and he was praising it and talking how wonderful it is to be for gays. Huge gay celebration. And they had a special section of transgenders, of men who claimed to be women and women who claimed to be men. A man with a male body, male organs, male body, male everything, who insists that he's really a woman. And women with female organs, female body, female everything, who insist that they're really men. Just insanity. Insanity. And Trump had a big party and big celebration for them, announcing his complete support for their entire agenda. Is this what you think is going to save America? I mean, is this good for America? I'm just asking. I don't think it's good. But I don't know. Maybe you Trumpsters are right. Maybe it's good that they have a president who promotes the gay agenda and the trans agenda and all these other, and wanting to turn America into Sodom and Gomorrah. I don't know. I mean, I seem to remember that the last time there was a Sodom and Gomorrah didn't go over very well with God. I remember what God did to the last Sodom and Gomorrah. So I don't think that's a very good idea. But, you know, you Trumpsters obviously don't think this is any big deal. That he's abortion on demand, gay marriage, all of these other things. He went along with all of it. You know, and again, for Israel, he was bad news. Thank you, Confederate Kahanist. And now we go to Another great JTF. You see, this just makes my day after a very rough night that we had. But at least I'm here with my fellow JTFers answering questions from my fellow JTFers or trying to. And that's always reinvigorating. And we have Kahana Was Right BT, who is certainly a great JTFer. And he writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim. One, if Trump and Biden are both still alive by 2024, I'm 99.9% convinced the presidential election will consist of these two nominees again. What would be the best outcome of a Biden versus Trump race in 2024? Unquote. I don't know. There is one other scenario, Kahana Was Right, that you may be leaving out, and that's a possibility that Trump could be indicted. He could have legal trouble before 2024. That's a possibility. But I think that I don't know. I have no idea who would win in a race like that. Right now, I think Trump would win because I think Biden's very unpopular. What will happen by 2024? It's a long time from now. Who knows? Who knows? It's almost three years from now. But and who would be better? Who would be worse? I think on Israel overall, Trump was worse because Kushner and Trump were promoting these so-called peace agreements with Persian Gulf countries that I thought were very dangerous for Israel, and was promoting his so-called Trump peace plan, which would have created a Palestinian state and would have brought Israel to the suicide boundaries. And everybody, all the Orthodox Jews, all the so-called right-wing Jews were saying it was wonderful. This is why it is so dangerous when you have the phony right. So I think on Israel right now, up until now, I think that Trump actually, Biden is terrible, by the way, on Israel. Terrible on all the issues. A horrible person. He's senile. He's evil. He's immoral. He's unprincipled. But Trump is all of that too. I don't think Trump is senile, but Trump is is almost all of that as well. And on Israel, I actually think he's worse. Kahana Was Right now writes, and I quote, two, please discuss the chaos going on in Hebron right now among the Arabs and how this exposes the evil of Bibi Netanyahu's surrender of Hebron to the Nazi PLO in the late 90s, unquote. There's always violence and murder going on among the Arabs, in every Arab community. That's one of the big things in the Israeli media all the time. What are we going to do about Arab crime and Arab murder? And we've got to do something to solve the problem for them because they're slaughtering each other and they're murdering their own children and in the Arab sector, I mean, they just gun each other down. The leader, they have city councils, and the city council, the Arab city councils, one guns down the other, and one Arab leader kills the other leader, and this is how they function. This is in Israeli cities. This is in Israel, in the land of Israel. It's just, barbarism. Yes, you're right. Bibi Netanyahu surrendered Hebron, surrendered 97% of Hebron to the Arab Nazis, to the PLO Nazis in 1997. It was 1997 or late 1996. I don't remember if it was late 96. It might have been December 96 or 97. And it was a horrible, horrible thing that led to the murder of Shalhevet Pass, who was a Jewish baby, who was shot to death by a PLO terrorist. horrible things that happened as a result of that. It's led to terrible consequences. And again, Shimon Peres and Yitzhak Rabin were afraid to surrender Hebron. They didn't want to hand over Hebron to the PLO terrorists. Even though the PLO terrorists and the Americans were demanding that they do so, but the leftist government in Israel was afraid to do so. They didn't have the power to do so because the Israeli people, when a left-wing government wants to make concessions, they say, oh, you're endangering Israel. But when a so-called right-wing prime minister does it, it's okay. Listen, if Netanyahu does it, how bad could it be? He's Mr. Security. He's Mar Bitachon, Mr. Security. That's the danger of Netanyahu and the danger of the Likud. They had a slogan, the Likud had a slogan in their campaign, only the Likud can do it. And they were referring to concessions, to making concessions in the negotiations. In other words, only the Likud could make these suicidal concessions and get away with it with the Israeli people. And that's why we're so opposed to the Likud. That's why JTF so opposes the Likud. Thank you, Kahana Was Right, and I want to thank everybody else for another program. that I certainly enjoy doing, even though we have very tragic news today about the destruction of two hilltop communities. But we're going to try to rebuild those communities and make them even better than they were before. At least now, these heroic Jews, who would try to rebuild anyway, with or without JTF, but with JTF, they're stronger than they were before. They've got more backing and more support, and things are better for them than they were before. Help us. Let's fight together to save the land of Israel. It's the most important cause of our generation. And this will determine who rules over the land of Israel. It is the premier battle of our lifetime. And it's our chance not just to read about Jewish history, but to write Jewish history. If we work together as a team, we can change Jewish history and make this a better world. For JTF, until next week, this is Chaim Ben Pesach. Shalom.